You know what would be refreshing right about now? A cocktail made with craft mead from our friends and sponsors Ricky and Kelly from Groenfell Meadery in Vermont. Take, for example, Buckland Mead, which is made from fresh lemon, green tea, and 100% wildflower honey. Add to that 2 ounces of gin and many dashes of Peychaud's bitters, and you have what they call a last hurrah. For more cocktail recipe ideas, follow Groenfell and Havoc on social media, and to order delicious craft meads delivered across the country to you, head on over to family-owned and operated Groenfell.com. That's Groenfell. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Brent Langdon shares his experiment in adding hops at different times in the boil. What effect will adding hops at 30, 20, 10, or 0 minutes have on a pale ale? And will Steve and I be able to tell which is which? If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And many thanks to everybody who is helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. This Friday, I'm planning on posting to financial subscribers an early release of our Lavender Smoked Saison video episode. This is the beer made with wind malt and smoked lavender malt from Sugar Creek Malting up in Indiana. I bittered this beer with an ounce of Czech Sots at the beginning of the boil. And as an added twist, I cooled the beer at the end of the boil to 150 degrees Fahrenheit or 65 C, and then added a bunch of Korsta hops from Sweden. And I held that for 15 minutes to see if I could get some of that super fruitiness out of those delicious hops. And by the way, thanks again to listener Marcus in Sweden for sending those delicious hops. I'd like to find those more locally. So I consider this to be one of the more layered and delicate beers that I've brewed. It was really delicious, and I say was because it's all gone, of course. And as I said, financial supporters will get an early release of that this week, along with the recipe and a behind-the-scenes video for upper-tier Patreon supporters, and I hope you all enjoy that. I pitched that beer with B56 Rustic from our friends and sponsors from Imperial Organic Yeast, and that yeast added some very interesting notes to an already complex beer. Now, if you want a nice, clean lager with low ester profiles and crisp and dry finishes, you'll want to check out L09 Que Bueno, which is Imperial's current seasonal yeast available until the end of May. As you know, I brewed my Mexican-style lager recently with a Que Bueno, and man, it was delicious. And again, in the past tense, it's all gone. Even at my basement temperature of around 58 degrees Fahrenheit or 14 C, Que Bueno was done in 3 or 4 days, without a starter, because with a pitch rate of 200 billion cells per easy-to-open pack, my stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore to make moderate-gravity 5-gallon batches, starters for those. And if I pitch in the afternoon, my airlock is usually bubbling before bedtime. And Casey at Imperial wanted me to let you know that during next month's Homebrew Con online, Imperial's going to be doing a presentation called The Homebrewer's Guide to Starting Lab Work, where you can expect to learn the basics of building a home lab and starting QC at home, wild capture of yeast, and a lot more. That's all from our friends at Imperial Organic Yeast. Ask your local homebrew store about Imperial and check them out at imperialyeast.com. And if you've been looking at social media, Imperial started a YouTube channel with videos on how you can handle yeast stuff in your home brewery. So be sure to check that out. And hey, I want to take a second to say congratulations to Casey and Dorothy Letillier on their new addition. Their son, Clive, took his time, but is finally here. So I'm so happy for Casey and Dorothy. Clive's a big 'un. And just a beautiful baby. So congratulations to Casey and Dorothy on their addition to the Ivoryville Brewing family. This past Sunday, I've taken it back to me, you know. I brewed maybe the quickest 5-gallon or 19-liter batch that I ever remember brewing. It's the one that I've been talking about using the pineapple puree in. I asked last week what y'all thought about putting unfermented fruit puree into the keg, and Barry R. on Twitter had some advice. Barry says, for your fruit puree beer, I found that most 3-pound canned purees are just a touch too much for 5-ish gallons of beer. Maybe either have a 7-gallon batch or ease off on the puree. I appreciate that, Barry. Appreciate that feedback. I'm still on the fence about whether to add all of the 3-pound or 1.3-kilogram of a can of that pineapple puree into the keg. The can looks really big. But in the nutrition facts, it says that it has 10 servings, and each serving is a half a cup. So that's essentially, if I add the whole thing, a cup per gallon? Metric folks, you just have to bear with me on this one. A cup for each gallon. That doesn't sound like a whole lot for pineapple puree. Maybe I'll taste it on the day that I keg and make a decision then. So I'm still open to advice if you got it. Hey, I brewed that beer on my electric brew-in-a-bag system from our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. But since this was an extract batch, I didn't need the bag or the mash mode on the Warthog EBC-130 controller. I just poured 5 gallons or 19 liters of water into the kettle and cranked it up to 100% power. And since my system is 240 volts and has a 4,500-watt Blickman boil coil in it, I reached boiling in a little less than half an hour. In fact, I had to turn it off for a couple of minutes to finish setting up the cameras and such. So while the water was heating up, I added 6 pounds or 2.7 kilograms of Pilsen light dry malt extract. And then, as soon as the wort hit the boiling point, just like in the hop samplers and the small batches that I do, just as soon as the wort hit that boiling point, I turned off the system and added 6 ounces or 170 grams of Centennial hops for a 10-minute hop stand. Again, just like the hop sampler. And after that, I turned on the immersion chiller and stirred the wort until it was below 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 37 C. And that just took a couple of minutes. The water's still pretty cold. And because I wanted to get out of the isomerization range pretty quickly. So just a little over an hour after I turned on the power initially, I was pitching Imperial juice into the wort, into the fermenter. It's crazy. Of course, there was set up in beforehand and clean up afterwards, but an hour brew day, it's pretty good. I'm spoiled by how quick my Warthog system from High Gravity brings water and wort up to temperature and how steady it holds the mash temperature when I do have a mash. You ought to yourself to head on over to highgravitybrew.com and see how Desiree and Dave can help you take the pain out of propane. From 5 gallons to 2 barrels, and whether it's a single, dual, or 3-vessel configuration, highgravitybrew.com has you covered. That's at family-owned and operated, highgravitybrew.com. Okay, you may remember a few years ago, Steve and I sat down with new papa, Casey Letillier. He wasn't new papa at that time, on the patio to taste an experiment I did with hops, added at 60 minutes, 30 minutes, and at flame out. Well, Brent Langdon has taken the concept further to examine what happens during the last half hour of the boil. Brent Langdon, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, you sent us an experiment, a challenging experiment, and something similar to what we've done in the past, but even more challenging than what we have done in the past. And I'll get into that. But first of all, talk about yourself. Tell us who you are and how long you've been in brewing and, you know, kind of your experience with the hobby.
Yeah, so I could tell you the long story, or I could tell you the longer story, but probably don't have time for all of it. But you know, I was back when I was in college, you know, just getting, you know, from drinking, you know, too much, you know, Busch. Got introduced to decent beer, ended up finding a little booklet on how to brew beer and a guy at work that you know, kind of was interested in the hobby. In 1993, brewed my first, you know, extract based batch, and then so off and on, you know, brewing moved up. You know, eventually had a pretty, you know, standard you know, three vessel process. There's a lot of manual work in there. Did that for many years, and then it was kind of, you know, back. I think it was the end of 2018. I found that I hadn't brewed beer. It was about 2.5 years. It was about a year into there. I went ahead and bought, you know, a couple batches, thinking that would, you know, motivate me, and they kind of sat in the closet. And then I was, you know, I was still attending a homebrew club. You know, just to try to, you know, keep me motivated, keep me in touch with the hobby, and one of the competition coordinator had handed out a pamphlet with some information on trying to get people to do, you know, these experimental beers and some stuff on brewlosophy, and I started looking at their site, and it really got me, you know, kind of motivated. You know, some of the, I think I'm like a lot of people in that, you know, I read books, and they said, you know, these are the rules for brewing beer, and this is how you mash, and this is how long your sparge needs to take, and I just followed those over and over, and I felt like I wasn't really improving. I was brewing. I had some beers that turned out well, and some beers that didn't turn out well, and I would just blame the recipe and move on to a different recipe next time. And so I really started getting into the, you know, the experimental ones and just the amazing amount of, you know, information on YouTube and you know, podcasts. So finding like your podcast and videos, you know, along with, you know, like brewlosophy and experimental brewing, and really got me motivated to start working in these you know, investigative, you know, experimental batches into my cycle, and then bringing those into my homebrew club. You know, I've done a lot of the single hop, you know, following, you know, similar process to you, just with a 3/4 gallon, you know, using an ounce of hops and just kind of using to evaluate things. So, you know, I've been, and then I guess, you know, lately, you know, with COVID, it's been a little harder to actually, you know, get out and share beers. I was kind of losing some of my motivation actually to brew beers, since I didn't have anybody to share the experimental one. So then I thought, you know, maybe I could start, you know, putting some of my, you know, putting together some articles on a website, and, you know, maybe putting some videos together. So that's why I've started the, you know, CascadesHomebrew.com. And I've got an appreciation for those people that put out, you know, several articles or several blogs or several podcasts, you know, a week constantly. It's a lot of work. So I've got a couple of videos that I've edited together and a couple of things I'm trying to work on, but it's a challenge.
Yeah, definitely puts more work in the hobby than if you know you've got to document everything that you do on a brew day. It's like, it's not. I got to admit, it's not as fun anymore. But there are worse ways.
Yeah, I've definitely found there's times I'm like kind of over the camera, or I'm trying to film something, and I'm messing things up because I'm worried about the video angle or something. But
well, as long as you keep it fun, that's the important thing. You know, as long as you find it fun to share the information, and again, cascadeshomebrew.com. And then you've posted a couple of videos on your homebrew channel, Cascades Homebrew. And I watched your 5-gallon batch brew in a bag video. That got interrupted by a thunderstorm, and so there's even another variable to put into your day.
That kind of reinforces why I've really been digging lately, doing some of the smaller batch on my stovetop. I'm probably actually going to try to do one this afternoon, you know, after I finish up work, because I don't have to worry about the darkness outside. I don't have to worry about the rain.
And so you do a lot of 2.5-gallon batches.
Yeah, so I find these days, I mean, I'm doing a mix of, some small, like 1 gallon batches, just kind of more pure experimental, either single grain, single hop, trying out maybe some different processes. And then I do a mix of, full 5 gallon batches, just, 5 gallons into a 5 gallon kegs. I'm doing a lot of 5 gallon batches where I'll split them between two different yeasts or try out, different fermentation temperatures or just, something that to kind of learn some. But then I'm also doing, I've got a 5 gallon pot that I can do, 2.5 gallon batches on my stovetop. And those are, I find that's a real good size. I got a couple of the 2.5 gallon kegs. I found when you're trying to iterate through a recipe, it's just a good size, and you've got a couple 6 packs you can take to share with friends or take them to a homebrew club, and it ages, at least enough that it ages a month or so before it's completely gone. And but then usually by the time I finished up 2.5 gallons, I'm thinking about what I want to do for the next iteration of that recipe. Or
It's a good way to pace yourself.
especially in the COVID era, I guess I kind of realized about 2 gallons of every 5 gallon batch was either a growler that I took to a gathering or to a homebrew club, and I lost that. I lost that outlet to share my beer. So the 2.5 gallon batches really have worked well for that.
Let's talk about your experiment. Talk about the sort of inspiration. What was the idea behind this, and talk about what you were trying to achieve.
The idea was to do something that nobody has ever done before. So when I reached out to you, and I think your message was, "You idiot, we already did this, but yeah, well, send me the beer anyways."
Think you're paraphrasing.
But no, I know you said, I think it was 2017 or something, you guys had done something similar with hop additions, and I think the motivation was the same, right? That I grew up, with the sort of reading the books and following recipes, and you put a bittering addition in at 60 minutes, and somewhere around 20 minutes you added your flavor hops, and then 5 minutes you added your aroma hops, and then some crazy some if you're really crazy you would maybe throw an ounce or two in a dry hop. And then lately, you kind of see all the recommendations are, don't add anything into the boil. Throw everything into a whirlpool hop at, 170 degrees, or, throw 8 ounces or a pound of dry hops. In some recipes, you see these 5 gallon batches with a pound of dry hops. And then I found kind of as I was brewing my beers, I'd brewed a couple of batches where I started moving stuff into more, flame out. And I felt like there was something in there that was missing, but I couldn't quite tell like what that was, or if it's just the bitterness that was less bitter. I didn't like it. So that's what's kind of what the motivation was here, to go back and see like, do adding hops, make a difference? Like what kind of flavors do they actually impart?
Yeah, and you're talking about the original doctrine of when you must add your hops. In fact, the original recipe section on basicbrewing.com, which doesn't exist anymore, mainly because I was trying to make recipes super easy for homebrewers. And part of that was breaking it down into, here's what you do during the brew process. So I had like the 60-minute addition, the 15-minute addition, the flame out, the 5-minute addition. And it was so rigid because that's the way you were supposed to do it, or at least that's, back in the day, that's the way I learned, is that's when you put the bittering addition, that then you put the flavor addition, then you put the aroma addition, and you shall not deviate from that. Is that
Right.
pretty much the way you learned?
Right. And I still, for a lot of recipes, like a porter, I mean, that's pretty much exactly what I do. If I want a little bit of flavor, I'll throw some in it, maybe 10 minutes. I throw some bittering hops in there. But yeah, these days with the sort of New England IPAs and then just a massive amount of dry hopping and late addition hops, it kind of, turns some of that on its end.
Yeah, it's just fairly recently that things have just, gone kind of, we've thrown everything out the window. So the original experiment that we did, and Steve and I tasted this on the patio with Casey Letellier, back in the day. I can't even remember when it was. But what we did was a 60-minute edition, a 30-minute edition, and a flame-out edition. So we had three batches, one with only hops added at 60 minutes, one with only hops added at 30 minutes, and one only hops added at flame-out. And I think that we shared that with the Brewlosophy guys at a homebrew con. We shared one experiment with them. I think that's the one it was. And it was Steve and Casey were able to get it. They nailed it. And I did not.
The foreshadowing.
No spoilers. So talk about your process. How did you put these batches together?
Yeah, so the different, and I mean the basic difference from what you guys did was mine was concentrated a little bit more on later addition. So basically following very similar to your hop sampler process, and I added a little extra water. I tried to calculate how much water I would need to end up with the, because I boiled these for half an hour. I ended up with a little off calculations, but yeah, I took 1 pound of Breeze pills and dry malt extract. In this case, I used a half an ounce of Mosaic hops here, and I added either that half an ounce either at 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, or 0 minutes left in the boil. Fermented that with the Cellar Science Cali dry yeast. So they were all boiled for, every batch was boiled for 30 minutes for consistency. It just depended. The only variable was when the hops were done. One thing I know is that, and I've kind of looking back, the 01, I basically threw it in at flame out, put the lid on, moved it to my sink, and those chill pretty fast. Those are 1 gallon batches in an ice bath will chill pretty quick. So I do wonder if there's some of that that may not quite correlate to how it would work in a 5 gallon batch where it takes me, 5 or 10 minutes to start getting the wort chill down. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Scaling this up from it's kind of like the difference between, a homebrew batch and a professional batch, where the pros say, add this certain amount of hops at flame out, or not flame out, but whirlpool. Well, depending on how long it takes to chill their wort, it could be 30 minutes at a hot temperature. Whereas as soon as you put the wort chiller into a 5 gallon batch, or even, especially in a 2.5 gallon batch, you add your hops at that point, you may be done. The hops may be out of the utilization range in just a matter of just a few minutes. So this, yeah, you're right. This even amplifies it even more, going even smaller.
Right. And my understanding of most commercial breweries, like there'll be a large amount of wort that's still at that hot temperature. And as they're just feeding some through their chiller, that chills, but the bulk of it is still hot. Or you're right, as a home brewer, we start as an immersion chiller, what I use, or in an ice bath, you're chilling the entire thing down. So it's getting below if 170 Fahrenheit is that magic number where you stop getting bitterness. That happens very quickly in a homebrew scale.
Yeah. And in my 1 gallon batches, I think I can go from boiling to pitching temperature in like f less than 15 minutes. So
Right.
the time it spends in that, kind of golden time is very small. That's why on the hop sampler batches, I steep for 10 minutes just at the boiling temperature, and that way I know that, it's getting some utilization, it's getting some of those hop flavors and aromas out. So yeah, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
I was kind of debating about there's I think anytime if you look at say an experiment that Brewlosophy does, there's dozens of ways that different do it. So I look, how you would adjust it. I went with the Mosaic because they are 9.5% alpha acids. They were less than say a Citra or Simcoe that I had, but they weren't the you see every kind of experiment seems to be at the professional level done with Cascade, and like you always wonder does how does that apply to the hops I use, or and then I wonder like if I was using like a 3% hop, how does that really apply? So the Mosaic seemed like it was a decent fit. The other thing was I decided to add the same amount at each addition, which meant I don't have it in front of me, but I know I sent you the calculated IBUs. And at 30 minutes, a half an ounce of Mosaic is somewhere around 100 IBUs. I was worried it was going to be just crazy bitter, which it may have turned out a little bitter, but I also wasn't sure the other option would be trying to scale the addition. So I'm adding whatever, a quarter of an ounce of Mosaic for the 30-minute addition, and I'm adding 1.5 ounces for the flame out addition to try to rely on some calculated IBU that may or may not be accurate. So
Yeah, and that gets you into adding another variable into your experiment, and
right.
you don't want to do that. Yeah, the calculated IBUs that you sent me for the 30-minute batch, 91 IBUs, for the 20-minute batch, 74, for the 10-minute, 50, and then for the 0-minute, 14. And was that Beersmith that gave you those numbers?
Right.
Okay. So you would think that those numbers from 91 to 14, you would think they would be pretty easy to determine. And before we get into to what your sensory perceptions were, I took these beers over to. Is there anything else in the process that you want to talk about before we get into the tasting?
No, I think we covered everything.
Cliffhanger. Let's take a quick break to talk about our friends and sponsors at Tavor. If you listen to the show, you know about Tavor. It's a way to select delicious craft beers that you may not be able to find in your area and have them delivered to you. It's not a beer of the month club where someone else chooses beer for you and it's just a surprise when it shows up at your door. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com and download their iPhone or Android app. You'll receive notifications for two new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip Tavor. This month, look for Hoosier, Odd Muse, Black Horizon, Liquid Love, Montclair, Tupps, Old Irving, Brick and Feather, Revolution, and Talaya Beer Company. If you're not interested in the beers you see, no worries. Just skip the ones you don't want. However, when you see something that you do, and you will, don't wait. Just click to get it and add it to your crate. Your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing you enough time to fill a box and pay the least shipping. So what a deal. Why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up, and there is no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or download the app, and when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, all one word, and you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. Again, it's free to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or with the Tavor app and enter Basic Brewing as the promo code. Okay, so now we go. Steve and I have been fully vaccinated, so for the first time in a long time, we're able to do, a tasting close enough for me to just have one microphone between us, and we're able to sample the beers in the office of stevesbrewshop.com. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James.
We're here unmasked because we're both vaccinated.
That's right. We're free. Free at last.
Or relatively so.
Relatively so.
We're here in the office of stevesbrewshop.com, and we're waiting on the delivery truck to come so that I can help you
That's right.
help you unload a pallet of stuff. But we've got an experiment here in front of us from Brent Langdon, and this is a toughie. We did this a while back and sitting out on the patio with Casey Letellier, and we did 60 minutes, 30 minutes, and flame out. And y'all were able to correctly identify the beers. I got messed up. I remember I got one right, but I confused, I think, the 30 and the flame out, maybe. This one's tougher, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not that easy. I thought my first swig through, is that what you call it?
May
I swig? That's what that, on a pub crawl, it's a, you, may I swig through? At first, so my first drink, my first sips of them, I thought it was pretty easy to tell them apart. But as they warmed up, I was like, oh, you know.
I got a comment on the water profile sampler that every time we talk about how hard it is to tell them apart when they're cold. So the tradition is carried on here today. But it was difficult. And it's not that much easier right now. And these have been out for a while, and we've been sampling along the way. They've got a nice hoppy, fresh hoppy flavor. You know, I'd drink a pint of this. It's even though, you know, it's John Palmer's dreaded mosaic that, you know, he did. But that, I don't get a lot of rotten fruit from these or overripe fruit.
No, it's mosaic, and yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So I've arranged, I don't see what you've arranged over there. I've got mine arranged in front of me. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious to see. And I went from the 30 minutes to the 0 minutes. So we got a 30, we got a 20, we got a 10, we got a 0. So I got mine lined up from 30 down to the 0. And I'm just curious.
That's what I think I have. Right?
Yeah, 30 to 0.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I was trying to get more bitter to less bitter, and not necessarily hop flavor and aroma, because those are a little bit trickier for me.
Right, me too. Yeah, I was just, this is on the Steve bittering scale.
So allegedly we should be seeing 91 IBUs, 74 IBUs, 50 IBUs, and 14. So you would think that there'd be a big difference between these.
Yeah. Well, I think there is a big difference between the what I call the most bitter beer down to the least bitter beer, but the two in the middle are a little trickier.
Okay, so what did you call the most bitter, or the 30-minute beer?
The most bitter was my sophomore year in high school. I have a lot of bad memories about that. I'll talk to you later, Melanie. But the most bitter beer would be C.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We're on the same. Of course, it doesn't mean we're right.
No, it doesn't mean we're right. It just means that we agree.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay, me go next.
Okay.
Okay, I said that D was the second bitterest.
Okay, now I said A.
Oh, my.
Uh-oh. Well, it's just...
Okay.
I'm using my own Steve's bittering scale.
Yeah.
Which is...
S-S-S-B-S-P-C.
Yeah.
No, S-B-S. Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to taste my second one again. Okay, I just tasted my D again.
Okay.
And I'm standing by it. I think D I think C is the most bitter. I think D is the second most bitter. But, you know, my taste buds may be wrong. You're going back and tasting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I may be wrong too. I don't know. They're so close together. I can't.
Yeah.
I kind of flipped a coin, but I put them in alphabetical order. So.
Okay, number three. What'd you get for number three?
I got D.
Oh. Huh. I got B.
So. Well, again, it's one of those, you know, so clearly I have B as the least bitter.
Right.
So. Huh.
So it's interesting. So I had C being the most bitter, D, and then B, and then A.
And I have C, A, D, B.
Hmm. Interesting. So the biggest difference is our A's and D's.
Yeah.
mine was the third. D was the third bitterest, and mm-hmm. A was the least bitterest, and we've got those reversed, basically, right or no? Right. Well, almost, because you said the okay. We need a sports commentator in here.
That's right. Howard Cosell.
We're doing, what do they call it, ranking voting now? Okay, yeah. so So I'm not sure how confident I am in all this, but
well, I'm not either.
But there you go. So now we have an envelope from Brent. So I'm going to do my Karnak here.
All right.
Igloo.
Igloo.
What do you do to keep your ig together?
Use igloo.
Use igloo. I'll put a better one in later on. Oh, and I ripped the answer. Here, you okay. You open it.
All right.
Oh.
A, B, C, D. But, holy cruel. Well,
no, A is 20 minutes.
Oh. Oh.
Oh, okay. I got A as flame out. Whoa. Oh, so you got A. You got A right. You got A right.
I got A right.
B is 0 minutes.
I got B right.
You got B. Holy crap. I got B as the 10 minute.
I got C is 30. I got D is 10. I got right.
Oh, my God.
Well, yes, you may address me as that.
No kidding. Holy crap. That's impressive. How could I have been so wrong? We got, okay, so C was the dominant. We both got C.
Yep.
That was, I think, and I think we can say that that's, you know, that was the most bitter.
Yeah.
But I can't, I mean, D is 10 minutes, and I said that it was 20.
Yep.
A is the 20. I said it was 0. B, so I don't know. But you nailed it.
I nailed it. Yes, I did.
Wow.
Yep. But I also invested in Betamax. So
so you were right, yeah. But it doesn't matter.
That's right.
Holy smokes. Well, shoot. It'll be interesting to see what Brent says and how, you know, his palate compares and, you know. But congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What did I win?
my respect and support. That and $5 will get you a cup of coffee.
That's right.
All right. Well, this has been fun regardless.
Yeah.
Thanks, right. Steve.
You're welcome, James.
So, Brent, there you go. Steve wiped the floor with me on this tasting. The only thing that we agreed on was the 30-minute edition, the most bitter edition. And it was clearly, you know, the most bitter to me. And of course, after I had the key in my hand, I went back and tasted the beers, you know, and then I said, okay, well, I can see where D, you know, could be the, or, you know, this is where A could be more bitter. But I was all over the road. How did you do?
So I was able, I was able to get, identify them, I did a blind tasting where I labeled them and tasted them, randomized them myself. And kind of like I saw you guys doing, the thing that it was really was the bitterness that I was keying in on. And that was really the factor that I was using to line them up. I definitely felt that the 30 minute beer was bitter. It was out of balance, bitter. Initially I thought there wasn't much, I didn't get much difference between, you know, the 0 minute and the 10 minute edition one, but I was able to get those in the correct order. And then I felt like, you know, in my case, I felt like, you know, the 20 minute one was definitely a little more bitter than those ones. So I thought that was interesting. I think that surprised me a little bit was sort of the flavor aroma taste kind of area. Cause initially went through them, I identified two that I thought had more hop character to them. But then I was confused because those were also the two that I identified as being the most bitter.
Yeah.
And I think, I've got a video of it and I'm watching myself, and I think as I'm, cause I know what the beers are. Or, I mean, I know what the nature of the experiment is. And I have freaking, you know, these notions of what I should expect. I should expect this one to be, you know, I should expect one of them to be low bitterness with lots of fruity hop aromas. And I should expect, you know, 30 minute one that's very bitter and has zero hop character because it all got boiled out. So I tried to kind of, you know, line up with what I knew the beer should be, or at least I thought the beer should be, and what I was actually censoring. So I thought it was interesting. I definitely was getting hop character out of, say, the 20 and 30 minute edition, ones that were boiled for 20 and 30 minutes. But I don't think they definitely kind of leaned toward more of a generic kind of hop. Yeah, I'm not that great with my terms, but whether they're more of a spicy kind of herbal, kind of the generic hop flavor, that flavor that you expect from hops, because, and then I went back and tasted another one where I knew each of them were. And I could definitely tell, I felt like the 10-minute one and the 20-minute one were actually both, reasonably enjoyable beers. I felt like the one that was for 20 minutes really kind of had some of that old school IPA kind of character to it. It had hops that were added to the boil. It had a bitter backbone. And clearly these were very light, just Pilsen. So they didn't have a malty backbone to it, but it had some of the hop character that I would have expected in, an IPA that I brewed, 8 years ago. More the 10-minute one, I could start seeing it getting a little bit more fruity. I think to some extent, maybe the 0-1-minute one didn't have as much hop flavor that I detected, but it did have some kind of pineapple-y things. But I think some of that maybe just because the hops were in there for so little time before it got chilled down. But
yeah, I think I liked, we didn't talk about which one we liked the most on the recording, but I think maybe the 20-minute edition may have been my favorite, and maybe that's why I thought, since it had the most kind of well-rounded hop. Of course, I'm making stuff up now, but but maybe it had a more well-rounded, hop character of a kind of balance between, the flavor and the bitterness, and maybe that's why I thought it was the 0-1. I don't know. I don't know what was going through my palate or my head. But do you have a favorite?
Yeah, like I said, I thought both the 20-minute boil one, I thought was probably of the beers, was the one that was like you could hand it to somebody and they could drink it. I had tried to, and I'm not sure if you guys did these. I know in your first when you did it with the 60-minute, 30-minute 0-1, you were talking about trying to mix them together. I tried doing some of that, and I couldn't quite come out if it was better or worse, combining them, or if they added more flavors. It was probably my palate was probably kind of wrecked at that point from sampling the different beers. But
yeah, that's a tricky one.
I don't know what my takeaway was. I think I was finding that for a classic American IPA, that I think I like hops that are in the boil, whether that's at 20 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, I don't quite know. But the idea of if you're trying to brew a classic American IPA and you're just throwing all your hops in a whirlpool, I think it's missing some of that character that I associate with that style of beer. But I do see where some of the flavors in those, the 20-minute boil edition may not be appropriate for your big fruity New England IPA, where you really want those juicy, tropical citrusy kind of flavors to pop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to be said for a solid bittering charge in a traditional American IPA. And I like the juicy ones too. I like the 100% post-boil beers as well. Last night my wife and I were we went to a couple of breweries with friends to celebrate our post-vaccine-ness, and my favorite beer of the evening was just a super clean IPA, with just a nice solid bitterness and, sharp and, clean fermentation and nice hop character. And, it wasn't sort of gimmicky. Not saying the other beers that I had were, but, it's just something to be said for. It's just something that's nice and clean and crisp and drinkable. And I think that a nice solid bittering charge early in the boil kind of helps that. Or at least, like in this instance, enough IBUs, long enough in the boil to achieve that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm on board with you too. You know, sometimes I do like New England IPAs or like hazies. They can be a little bit of a palate wrecker. Especially my girlfriend really loves the 8-9% just heavily murky kind of ones. And I found I could drink a bourbon barrel aged stout and still taste have more like palate left after than drinking some of those big hoppy beers. But yeah, I've kind of been leaning toward, I've been brewing more like classic American IPAs, pale ales, stuff with, Chinook and Centennial and stuff that you just can't really find a lot of times on tap places these days.
So how has this experiment changed your outlook, or is this going to change the way that you brew hoppy beers in the future?
Yeah, like most experiments, I think it answered, at least provided a couple clues, but maybe brought up more questions than answers per se. But like I said, I definitely think, the idea of brewing, an American IPA, if you want a more of a classic American IPA, and even if you're going for a really light, crisp body, I think adding hops, say in the boil, whether that's, I don't know, that's 10 minutes, 20 minutes, it does add some different character from those hops. I'm pretty convinced of that you get different character from boil hops versus, whirlpool hops and versus dry hops, and then there's all, Scott Janisch, like when do you add them in the dry hop and how much do you add them? Like you can get really, really technical, but so I think there's, when somebody says on the internet, like, no, you must move all your hops to a whirlpool edition, I think I would say to anybody, try it for yourself and see what you actually like in a beer, and then brew beers that follow, follow your taste buds and not necessarily what you read in an article or on a blog post or something.
And small batches are a good way to try out those those theories or those methods to see, what's actually working.
No, yeah, and I agree. I think probably like a lot of people, part of the reason I think I wasn't progressing as a brewer was I would get a recipe and it would be, this malt bill and have some Chinook and Centennial and Cascade hops in it, and I would get to the end and I would drink it, and you'd say, if there's something you liked or something you didn't like, well, what was that from? Was that my tap water? Was that because of the Chinook hops were old? Was that because my, I didn't like the yeast. I was my yeast. I didn't pitch enough yeast. There's just so many variables in a batch of beer. And it's really hard to, even if you take that exact recipe and then brew it 10 more times trying to change stuff, by the time you're on your 10th one, right, you're 6 years down the road, drinking those 5 gallon batches, and now your tastes have probably changed. Clearly the hops are different every year. They're all agricultural products. So yeah, I've definitely found that doing either these 1 gallon ones where you're really kind of trying to dig into one specific aspect, or doing 2.5 gallon batches where you're able to try out a recipe, evaluate it, and then try out another recipe, or taking 5 gallon batches and splitting them with different yeasts or different to get those side by side. If you can get beers side by side, I found that's just much more valuable than trying to remember what it tasted like a year ago.
Oh yeah, for sure. And if you did this experiment with a different kind of hop, with all the different hop compounds that are in, each variety, it could be that, this you'd get an entirely different result. I might even be able to tell them apart. Who knows?
Yeah, I love the, the Scott Janisch always, highlights a lot of the research being out there, and I'm like, okay, is this because it's a high alpha cumulone fatty thiol? I like linalool and geraniol, because those, I can, okay, geraniol tastes floral. I can get that, but it's when they start throwing all the numbers and alpha, beta, blah blah. I'm like, okay, but he probably knows. It is interesting because I was looking at some of the chapters in his book that talk about hops in the boil and some of the character that they add, and trying to, does that tie into what I did? And you're right, like a hop like Mosaic does something that you learn from using something with Mosaic, does that apply to Citra? Does that apply to Cascade Hops? Does that apply to, you know, East Kent Goldings?
This is why I have a show where I ask the questions and not answer them. I can't remember all this stuff. But, you know, I've got it on tape. I've got it on, well, there's no tape, but you know what I mean. It's all recorded, so I can go back and listen to it again. Well, excellent. I greatly appreciate your sending the beers. I greatly appreciate your sharing this experiment with us. It was fun to revisit, even though I screwed up. It was fun to, you know, even when you screw up, you learn something, right? I don't know.
Right.
But it was fun to, revisit the concept and to get kind of, you know, in a more, to zoom in a little bit more than what we did in ours. So I appreciate it. I appreciate your including us, Brent.
Yeah, I was glad I was able to, you know, share the beers with you and get them out to an audience, and especially in this time where I'm not able to get my home brew club together and sit down and share these kind of beers. So I'm hopefully people will find it useful and definitely it's a motivation for people to, you know, do their own experiments. And it's definitely one thing about, you know, hearing somebody, you know, talk about things or reading about a philosophy article, but I think, you know, brewing them and tasting them, and then, you know, a lot of people at my homebrew club have really, they've thanked me, like, for bringing in the experimental beers to the club, and that they've really learned a lot. So definitely that would be my takeaway would be, you know, get in, you know, trying to do some work in some experimental batches into your cycle and see how you would, what, and then brew beers that you like, you know, not based on what somebody told you should like.
Hear, hear. Thanks, Brent.
Yes, thanks a lot for having me.
Well, thanks again to Brent. Very enlightening and personally humiliating at the same time. I want a do-over. Be sure to check out Brent's blog at CascadesHomebrew.com and his YouTube channel, Cascades Homebrew. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.